Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We are officially at the All-Star break for Major League Baseball. The Home Run Derby took place last night, and the guy who won it in Cleveland in 2019, Pete Alonso, won it again last night as he smacked balls into orbit in that mile-high air in Colorado last. It was impressive, wasn't it,
JT? Did you ever try that? You ever take batting practice at a Major League ballpark? I have.
Yes, I've done it one time.
It's not easy to knock one out.
I've never come close. Yeah, I was more of a Mario Mendoza type player. You know, like I was a singles hitter.
We call you Punch and Judy.
Yes, that was
get them over.
Yeah,
bunt.
Yeah, bunt them over and get on base, steal bases, and all that. But last night that was fun to watch.
I watched a little bit of the celebrity softball game afterwards. Von Miller came up to the plate, the great outside linebacker for the Denver Broncos. He bunted.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That's because who's the wide receiver for Seattle that played it?
Metcalf. He struck out.
Yeah. He swung and missed and struck out. And then some girl that's on TikTok hit a double up against the fence and everything. So the Midsummer Classic festivities are happening. And at the break, the Indians are 45-42. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But I want to get to the title of the article from Zach Meisel, Jason Lloyd, and Bill Shea from The Athletic. The Indians' future in Cleveland, relocation questions, ownership status, payroll, and more. And right now on the Wake 'em Way hotline is Zach Meisel. Zach, thanks for making time for us. How are you today?
Doing well, fellas. How's it going?
Outstanding article by you guys, and that's why we wanted to get you on, and we'll talk about this team at the break, three games over 500, eight games out of first, but the bigger question to me is what you wrote about and the future of this team in the city of Cleveland. For our listeners out there, Zach, take them through a little bit of the research and finding out where things stand with the Dolan family and keeping the team here in Cleveland and maybe a minority owner coming in and helping them out doing so.
Yeah, I mean, so the original point to the story was, what is this going to look like in a few years? You know, we know the name change is coming, and so maybe you'll have new uniforms and a new name and new colors, and the ballpark is getting to be that age now, closing in on 30 years, where other cities, they just abandon those ballparks, and they knock them down and build something newer and shinier. So the question, also, well, with the payroll and not knowing who's going to be on the roster, I think the question was just, what does baseball look like in a few years here? And the more we thought about it, the more research we did, the more we heard from fans and what they were thinking, what they were wondering, I think the better question was, will there be baseball in Cleveland in a few years? So the first step was to set out to answer that question. And that's when we reached out to people in Nashville who said they've never had any conversations with Cleveland or about the Indians. It's when we did a little digging on the lease negotiations that are going on, and they're closing in on extending the lease, which would alleviate concerns of the team moving. And then, you know, a big thing is with ownership. How long do the Dolans want to own this team? Is there going to be a new minority investor, which we discovered that's likely happening somewhat soon? You know, how long do the Dolans want to remain majority owners? So a lot of changes in the air. This franchise is sort of at a crossroads, but I think the main point we came away with was the top priorities, aside from the name change, because that'll happen, but the other top priorities on the organization's list are making sure the lease is extended and securing a new minority owner to pump some cash into the organization, as John Sherman was for a few years. So you do those two things, and I think the franchise is in a much healthier place, and maybe fans aren't worried or wondering if this franchise is going to go somewhere else.
You piqued my interest the minute you said minority owner, and we're going to get to that in a second. But, Zach, I want to ask you, because a lot of our callers ask us this all the time, can a city the size of Cleveland support three major sports?
Yeah, it's something that even the executives with the teams have wondered, probably not the executives with the Browns, because they could exist and survive and thrive
anywhere, just based on the fact that it's such a diehard football town. But it is something that people have wondered. And I think the answer is actually yes. It just depends on the dynamics of the sport more so than the market. I mean, the Cavs are fine because their owner is worth $45 billion with a B, and they have a salary cap, and they have a fantastic TV deal. And so, look, I'm sure Cavs season ticket holder numbers will be down because the team has been it's had some rough years here, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get much better. But they're fine. I don't think there's anything to worry there. And you've got a beautiful new arena that just had renovations, and you're going to host an all-star game. So no one's worried about that. I think the Indians are the ones that maybe seem a little vulnerable, and I think it's because of MLB's circumstances. It's because there's revenue sharing, but there's not revenue sharing like you see in the other sports. And the TV deal, they're so reliant on the local TV deal more so than the major league one. So I think when you're able to get a minority investor, or eventually years down the road someone takes over for the Dolans, and maybe they don't care so much about that year-to-year ledger because the value of the franchise increases so much, then I think it's not really a question. And I think, yes, you can support all three. It's just you need the leagues to do a lot of the supporting.
Talking with Zach Meisel from The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter, at Zach Meisel, Indians beat reporter. Great story that's up on The Athletic right now about the Indians' future in Cleveland. So the minority owner, Zach, is there a possibility that they are searching for a minority owner that they want to eventually become the majority owner, but to make sure they stay in Cleveland with whoever that individual or group is?
Yeah, so like it's easier if we go back and look at John Sherman, and it took a few years for them. They used a search firm to find John Sherman, who came in and invested in the team. It started around 20% of the team, and after 3 years, it was up to about 30%. And they had an agreement where Sherman would eventually take over as majority owner, but it was on the Dolan's terms. So there was no set year, there was no guarantee. It was just, hey, if Paul Dolan wants to get out of this in 2025 and he's ready to sell, John Sherman is first in line and he can be the guy to take over. I would think a similar setup would happen with Stanley Middleman or whoever is the new minority investor here, where it's a similar thing. I mean, the Dolans aren't going to own the team forever. And I know Paul has hinted to me in the past that part of it might hinge on the health of his parents, who are right around 90 years old, and I know they'd love to see a championship in their lifetimes, but, right. You know, they've been waiting since they were teenagers, so who knows if that's possible. But yeah, I could see a similar thing, because if you're a minority investor, it's like, okay, well, there's not a huge benefit here. I mean, the Indians claim that they lose money every year, so if you're not doing it for a huge payday, what are you doing it for? Because maybe you get some input on certain decisions, maybe the name change would be one of those, but it's not like you have a ton of pull. So where the incentive comes is if you have a path to ownership, or just getting in the game so next time something comes available, as we saw with Sherman, who went home to Kansas City and bought his hometown Royals, the league knows you. They've done the vetting process. You kind of jump ahead in the line. So I would think a similar setup would happen. And what the reason why there's no timetable and things are left up to the discretion of the Dolans in these circumstances is they like to partner with the person. They like to get to know them. You know, Paul Dolan had built a relationship with John Sherman over those few years where he then felt comfortable and was to say, okay, you can be my successor one day. So I think it would be the same thing. And I think what you alluded to, Kenny, where, all right, you get to know a guy and you like working with him and you can see him as taking over for you, you'd probably have to feel comfortable with him keeping the team in Cleveland as well. Obviously, a lease extension would help that. But, if a lease goes for 15 to 20, 25 years, maybe a new owner you feel so comfortable with that he'd keep the team here far beyond that.
I don't know if you can feel comfortable, Zach, because as you mentioned, when Sherman went home to Kansas City. If Stanley Middleman is from New Jersey, he's not at home. How much of an advantage is it to have the Dolans being from Cleveland as your primary owner?
Yeah, I mean, it helps. I think that's kind of why this is happening in the manner it's happening in, where the Dolans have been here for five generations. They're going to do everything in their power to keep the team here. So that's why, instead of just saying, all right, we're out of here, Stanley Middleman, here are the keys, turn off the lights before you leave, it's, okay, Stanley Middleman, you can come on and you can get your foot in the door, but also we're signing this lease extension. So this team's going to be here for at least 15, 20, 25 more years, and you can figure it out after that.
All right, where is the lease situation right now, Zach Meisel, with the current one, and how close are they to getting something done with an extension?
So the lease expires after the 2023 season. So they've been meeting pretty regularly for about 2 years now. You know, you've got reps from the Indians. You've got reps from Gateway, who owns, they're basically the landlord there with the Q and Progressive Field. And then you've got city officials. So they'll reach an agreement here soon. And then you're going to have to, it's going to get a little messy with the political side, just because you've got council seats that are up, a new mayor who will come in the fall. So you're going to have to get all those people to approve it. So you'll have an initial agreement. They're very close on that. And then I think it'll take a little while longer to just get city and county approval after that. But it doesn't sound like it's anything to be concerned about.
It's going to affect the elections. I mean, when you think about it, whoever puts it on their, you know, platform that, hey, we're going to do everything in our power to keep the Indians, the Browns, the Cavaliers in town, a lot of people, I would imagine, would want to vote for that individual the same way they passed the syntax, right, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I won't pretend to be an expert on this stuff. I know this sort of thing mixes with politics all the time, even going back to, 1990. They had to pass a referendum to build Progressive for Jacobs Field. Otherwise,
right,
the team was going to move to Denver or Tampa. So it has never reached the point of an ultimatum like that.
Okay.
And I think that was also part of the motivation in our story, is they've said internally for a while now, we're not moving anywhere. So that can't be part of the negotiations, but I think they feel comfortable with where they're at, and they've got agreements from all sides that shouldn't be an issue.
Zach, over the last year and a half, we've heard so many things, and especially during the work stoppage going into the pandemic, we had heard Antonetti say that the Indians and the Dolans were losing tens of millions of dollars. Now, if we move forward past the pandemic and we're starting to open up the stadium and everything else, if the league were to stop, if there was work stoppage, because the other thing we hear is they could go out on strike. If they do, and they've already lost tens of millions of dollars due to the pandemic, how would this affect them, and how would this really make them look into maybe selling the team again?
Well, I think that's why I wouldn't be surprised if this new minority owner came aboard before the winter, because the collective bargaining agreement expires December 1st. I don't think anybody has any idea of if or when they'll be able to agree on a new one. So I think it's important to have that security blanket intact once you get to that sort of uncharted territory. It's something they've thought about internally. I mean, they've told certain scouts, like, hey, if you can get a 3-year contract with another team, go get that security, because we can't promise anything until we understand what the future looks like here first. I mean, the payroll, look, I have no idea. I've never seen their books. I don't know how much money they bring in, how much money they lose. And I wish I did, because it would make everything a lot more clear. And I think we'd all have a better grasp of what the situation really is. The one thing I know is this is their lifeblood. I mean, you have other owners who are tech magnates who have, they're worth billions of dollars, and they run a team just for fun. And the Dolans aren't that. It's, as Jason Lloyd has said over and over again, it's a mom and pop shop in a land of billionaires. And in one way, I mean, it's unfortunate, because it's, I wish we didn't have to talk about payroll so much when talking about this organization, but they've got the lowest payroll in the league. So I think the good thing is,
the Dolans internally have said that the payroll will go up in the coming years, and a minority investor will help that too, where you can have some more breathing room, and like there are no excuses with Shane Bieber or Jose Ramirez or whoever else who you can sign long term, especially since you have nothing on the budget moving forward.
Talking with Zach Meisel, outstanding Indians beat reporter at The Athletic, and I just want to interject something. I didn't want to interrupt you guys there. If you're losing money and you can show it on the books, why don't you show it? That's why I'm skeptical about it. Show me that you're losing money, okay? That way people are going to get off your back, and that's where I question that big time, Zach. And we'll just leave it at that for now because I want to go in a different direction here with the name change. What is the latest on the name change? When can we expect the Indians to no longer be the Indians and they become the Guardians, the Spiders, the Dingers, the Bats, whatever the heck their new nickname is going to be?
Well, I think we should know soon when we'll know something. And that's unfortunately about as specific as I can get. I mean, this is like, you want to talk about it. It would be so much easier to find America's nuclear codes or like the answer to who was D.B. Cooper. I mean, this is top secret information. I can't even find out where they have these meetings, when they have these meetings, who's in the meetings. Can you tell me what's served for lunch at the meetings? The answer is no. So Paul Dolan had said that they would know by about the middle of 2021 whether they would be able to complete this process in time for the 2022 season. So that would suggest that we should know somewhat soon because we're in the middle of 2021 here. And so think about everything you have to do in terms of trademarking, in terms of approval across the league and making sure – you know, you're not using something that someone else uses that they have property rights of.
Right.
And to scrub the name Indians from everywhere in Cleveland and in the ballpark and to come up with new uniforms and a logo and a branding plan and messaging and marketing. And there's so much that goes into it that you need that runway. So if you're going to have this ready in time for 2022, well, it's not just opening day. It's spring training and it's getting ready for spring training and trying to sell merchandise. So, I mean, you're really talking about, like, the new year. And so we're only 6 months from that. So I would think if you are comfortable that you're going to be ready then you probably know what the name is now. And if that's the case, I would think we would know soon. I'm skeptical that that's the case, though. So I would think. And even if they know the name, I don't think they're going to reveal it for a while. But I don't think they're there yet. But I think we should know soon a better time frame for when this is all going to happen. Because you're getting late in the game and it takes so long to do all those things on the checklist.
How much do you think the Washington football team name change affects what the Indians do?
I think it shines a little light on just how long the process takes, the fact that they're going to play another season as the Washington football team. I think that just – I don't know the answer of when this is going to happen, but I would at least be prepared for a 2022 season as the Indians just because, I mean, it's taken them a long time too. So this isn't simple.
Okay, so let's go to the 2022 season. Will they have any outfielders by 2022 that can help them on a regular basis? Because I just looked at what they did in the first 11 picks of the Major League Baseball draft. They took 10 pitchers and a shortstop. What is it that this organization can develop pitchers, Zach Meisel? They've got 32 shortstops now in the minor leagues, but they don't have any outfielders in the minors or the majors. I guess I'm being a little funny here with this, but I'm not. What is it with this team that since they got rid of Michael Brantley, they haven't had a legitimate outfielder, in my opinion?
Jeez, you want a new name, a minority owner, a new leader? You want outfielders too?
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's been an issue. I mean, even when they had Brantley, they had holes in center field. So it's this has gone back to like the days of Grady Sizemore and Trot Nixon and David DeLucci. So they know what they do well, and they develop college pitchers really well. And they took 18 pitchers in 20 rounds. I mean, wow. They're not the only team. The Angels took 20 pitchers, all pitchers. I saw someone called it a no-hitter. It's literally no-hitter.
good one. I love it.
Look, they know how to scout pitching, and they know they know how to develop it. They can take a certain skill set and turn it into something that works. So that's great. So do that. What they've done is that's been their emphasis in the amateur draft in the summer. And then when they sign international players, they're signing shortstops. And the thought is you start as a shortstop, and if you are super athletic and have really good hands, you can stay at shortstop. If not, you can move anywhere else, because if you can play shortstop, you can probably figure out center field, or you can certainly figure out second base or first base. So that's the thought process. We haven't had enough evidence to see if that works, because they just started this a couple of years ago, and a lot of those kids are at high A or double A. But the problem is, as you alluded to, you have not done anything to fix the outfield, and you're going to need to see more of guys like Harold Ramirez, who maybe can be something who can help. Is Oscar Mercado an answer? Have we seen enough of Bradley Zimmer? He's going to be 29 this winter. Wow. Like, I think
they can trade him to Seattle with my buddy Jake Bowers, and they can play together in Seattle. How's that?
Exactly. So, yeah, it's the one thing too is you load up on pitchers, you load up on shortstops, and you know what you can trade away because you have enough of those things. So the outfield, as has been the case for a long time now, is going to be an area where you've got to trade a couple pitchers, trade a couple shortstops, and address your outfield, because they don't have, I mean, maybe Nolan Jones comes in at some point and he's playing right field, but that's one spot. They don't have a center fielder. Eddie Rosario has been disappointing, and he's injured, and he's not going to be back next season. So they don't have a left fielder. Their top outfield prospect is George Valera. He's probably a good 2 years away. So if they trade for someone who has a few years of control, whether it's this month or this winter, the very heavy odds would be on an outfielder.
All right, so are they buyers or sellers at 45 and 42, 8 games out of first, but still in the wild card race, in your opinion?
I think neither, honestly. I think the line is kind of blurred. I think they could do a little of both, where they maybe you trade Cesar Hernandez because you'd rather see Owen Miller and Andre Jimenez play there, even Ernie Clement. And Hernandez, I mean, if you replace him with someone, yeah, maybe it's a tiny step down, but I don't think I don't really think this is a playoff team anyway. But at the same time, I do think they're exploring outfielders or starting pitchers who have 3-4 years of team control, where they could package a few prospects and acquire somebody. Because as I said, it's like you've got an outfield issue now, and Kenny, you said it, you're going to have an outfield issue next year too. So you have to trade for someone at some point. And it's not going to be a rental. It's going to be someone who's got 3-4 years of control.
All right, last thing, and this is just for this year's team. What's the latest on the walking wounded for this team? If they are going to make a run and do nothing and just get everybody healthy, where are we with some of the injured players that are key to this team, most importantly, the two pitchers?
Yeah, Savali and Bieber, you're probably looking at about maybe a month away, maybe a little less for Savali. But you're definitely looking at August. Bieber, they're hoping, will start his actual throwing program this week. Savali started it at the end of last week. So, it takes time. You got to play catch from 60 feet, then 90 feet, then 120 feet, and then throw a bullpen session, another bullpen session, and a third bullpen session. Then you can make a couple rehab starts. So the process takes a little while, but they're at least beginning the process. But I think you're looking at 3 to 4 weeks, maybe slightly longer for Bieber.
All right, that's not encouraging, but especially with the schedule they have coming out of the All-Star break, Zach. So they may become sellers rather quickly if they continue to lose game against the better teams, as they're doing well against the cupcakes in the Central, but everybody else, they're seven games under 500 or nine games under 500, whatever that is. So, hey, great article. I texted Jason but didn't hear back from him. Tell him as well. And Mr. Shea, great article. That's why we wanted to have you on. Keep doing the fantastic work there at The Athletic and covering the Indians. And thanks for always making time for us.
You got it, fellas. Take care.
Zach Meisel checking in via the Wake 'Em Way hotline, the latest on your Cleveland Indians for this year and the future.